Blog Talk Radio.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright, sunshiny day. Gonna be a bright, sunshiny day. I think I can make it now, the pain is gone. All of the bad feelings have disappeared. Here is that rainbow I've been praying for. It's gonna be a bright, sunshiny day.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you would like to make during this broadcast, you can email me at Bonkaye, B-O-N-K-A-Y-E, at AOL.com. Well, I've been away for a few weeks. We had our healing weekend. That was phenomenal in Virginia. The most wonderful women that anybody could expect to spend a weekend with, all going through the healing process by sharing with each other, making new support systems. It was a wonderful, wonderful weekend. We had some wonderful therapists who participated with us, who are part of our network. And it was just such a rewarding feeling for me to be able to bond with women who I'm in touch with, some who I've met before, some who I'm friends with. A wonderful experience. And next year, we're going to California. So we'll be talking more about our upcoming healing weekend next year in California, because it's a beautiful place to go and certainly a beautiful place to heal. After that, I was on vacation and went away, needed a break, and had a wonderful break. So now it's time to get back and move forward in our efforts to help our straight sisters understand, you know, what's going on in their lives and how to move forward from it. Before I introduce my guests for tonight, I just want to mention to you that we have some wonderful other guests who will be coming up throughout June and July. Some of the favorites who will come back to talk to us, including Suzette Vernon. She's scheduled to come back. Kristen Cowbley, who has her own radio show now for straight spouses. We'll talk more about that with Kristen. And some of our other therapists who have helped us. And so Dr. Brian Hooper is coming back for Father's Day. I'm really excited about that. Brian been away for a few months, and he really wants to say hi to all of our women listeners and give you encouragement and support. Tonight, I have my dear friend Deborah Sutton joining us. Hi, Deborah.
Hi, Bonnie.
Thank you so much for giving me the help tonight. And Deborah and I welcome back one of our favorite people, Dr. Ira Gelman. Ira, thank you so much for coming back and joining us.
My pleasure.
You know, Ira, I know that, you know, sometimes you say, well, what should we talk about? And it seems like we've talked about it before. But unfortunately, we can never talk about it enough. And you're the psychology expert. And so we depend on you to help us understand things better. And last time when you came on the show, Deborah and I talked to you a lot about different kinds of personality disorders. Deborah is very much in tune to being an expert already on narcissism. She writes lots of articles about it and has lots of blogs about it. She's lived that life, and she's helped many of our women understand that aspect. And I know that you talked to us about people who have sociopathic or antisocial behavior. And I think the main thing that I want to just stress, you know, tonight, Deborah and I were talking about this, maybe you could talk to us, tell our women, you know, if they're in a marriage and they're with someone who has a personality disorder and they can't get out of it right away today, because some people need planning, time, whatever the case is, what are some of the best coping strategies when you're living with someone who's trying to trip you up? Would you have any advice on that?
Wow, you're starting off on a heavy-hitting one. Well, first, the person has to get some, at least some distance between them and, I'm assuming we're talking about like a, you know, a narcissistic husband. They need to have some like emotional distance between them to keep their own sanity together, because the narcissist is going to always twist things around like everything that the wife does is wrong. And even though it may be obvious to everyone on the outside that this is happening, when someone's on the inside and they're constantly having somebody point a finger at them, you can't help but be affected by it, and you start to doubt yourself. So one of the first things I would say is don't doubt yourself, because it becomes very easy to think that maybe you are doing something wrong to cause whatever issues in the marriage are happening, and let this person, you know, manipulate you. Don't go there with them.
And
don't,
I think,
even
that's
argue.
What happens a lot, right, Deborah? You know, Deborah can tell you a little more about that, how they, what I call gay light, other people call gaslight, but in our situation, you know, they're constantly reminding us that we're inadequate, not them. And I think that if you hear this thought process enough, you start to believe it. Deb, would you say so?
Well, in my case, I felt like, well, yes, I did feel blamed and shamed in marriage. I didn't really believe everything he was telling me, but it hurt so bad that he thought that way of me, and then I was always trying to prove my worth and my value to him. So I was jumping through hoops and walking on eggshells.
Yeah, that's part of, like, the grooming that they have. So besides not doubting yourself, don't prove anything to someone like that, because you're setting yourself up for failure.
Yes.
When people are in a there's nothing wrong with me mode, it's all you, you can add one and one on 10 different calculators, and they'll argue with you, it's still not two.
Yes.
And that's really important for people to recognize. This is dealing with like just people who are not all there. You could have every bit of documentation and proof and support to show that what you're saying is accurate, but if they don't want to see it, they won't. So it's almost a waste, not almost, it is a waste of time trying to prove whatever the person's trying to dump on you. You almost have to become deaf, dumb, and blind to it.
And they project a lot of what they're doing onto you. My ex used to, I mean, and this would just come out of the blue. He would just start calling me a liar and saying that people don't live honest lives. Well, you know, he was the liar and living a dishonest life, but he was projecting that onto me. And I would say, what am I lying about? What am I doing? I didn't even know where this came from. But the, and then it would just lead for of hours of him tearing me down for no reason.
Yeah. Yeah, because in his world.
I'd like to ask you.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, when they're doing this, do they realize that they're doing this? I mean, is this a calculated move on their part? Or do they really believe that they're being the victim?
It's both.
Do they really believe we're doing something wrong?
It's both. There are some people that really are out of touch with reality and will believe what they're doing. Then there are others that still have a taste of reality, but this is where their antisocial behavior comes in. Or, you know, remember, antisocial and sociopath, you know, clinically, it's the same thing. So if someone is a sociopath, then they really believe what they're saying. So it's impossible to know. It's like a cult leader. You know, you had people like Jim Jones, the Branch Davidians in Waco, Texas. These leaders, you know, they claim to be the reincarnation of Jesus Christ.
Uh-huh.
Who knows if they believed it or not? I mean, they did die at the end, but it's impossible to know if they drank the poison because they just wanted to get out peacefully and escape, you know, life in jail, or if they believed their own delusions. It's impossible to know. So it's the same thing with men that, like, you know, Deborah's husband, without having spent any, even if you spend time with somebody, if anybody tells you that they can recognize a good liar, they're not in touch with reality. A good liar can deceive you almost every single time. So when that's why you know, I think your audience knows I teach at the high school and college level. Whenever I say to kids, you know, for those of you who are good liars and they're all smiling, patting themselves on their back, I then say, well, stop smiling because you're showing signs of the sociopathic behavior. Because if you could look someone in the eye and lie to them and know you're lying to them and be proud of that, that is exactly what a sociopath does. It may be on a mild level, but if you're proud of the fact that you can lie and deceive people, that is a sociopathic trait. So your question, you know, is it either or? It's both. For some men, they know that they're manipulating, but they're too ashamed, or they just want to win the argument, so they just, you know, will manipulate as much as they can knowingly. And others, they really do believe the nonsense that's coming out of their mouth.
No, it's interesting. There's a number of men that. Okay.
Oh, there's a narcissist who writes online, and he's a sociopath, and he considers himself to have awareness. But he writes about different levels of narcissism, and he says that some don't have awareness, that it's rare to have that the awareness that he does. But he knows exactly what he's doing and why he's doing it. And it's all to get fuel, supply, narcissistic supply.
That's pretty sad.
Yeah.
But I wanted to ask you this also, Ira, as far as men justifying behavior in these marriages specifically. I have met, well, let's go back to the sexuality issue to start with again. If a man is interested in having sex with another man, I mean, and they don't want to say that they're gay. They say it's just a sexual, you know, fascination or just a sexual thing. It has no emotional attachment to it. They don't want to be a gay man living the gay lifestyle. They just enjoy gay porno or fantasy and stuff. I say that's not straight. Do you agree with that or no?
Yeah, I do.
I mean, I think that most men who are straight, even though they're not acting on it, the only porno they're looking at is gay porno. They're buying gay sex objects, even if they claim they're only using them on themselves. But I think that these guys have lived a lie for so long that lying just becomes inherent in their personality. And they, after a while, they don't want to be gay, and they can convince themselves they're not gay, that all men have different sexual kinds of quirky things. Like some guys dress up, some guys are into stockings, some guys are into shoes. There's all kinds of different kinds of, you know, fetishes that people get into. And they describe this as a fetish. How do you view that?
If the fetish involves gay sex, then that's their attraction. Now, if they're just going to look at porn and, you know, I'm assuming we're talking married men, you know, heterosexually married, you know,
right.
That's where the wife has to make, you know, a decision, you know, on what she can and cannot live with. You know, is he still having sex with her? Could she accept that?
No, not at all.
You what?
No, they don't. They don't have sex with their wives. They like to call themselves maybe bisexual because they still have a wife. But I say if you have a wife and you're not intimate with her and you're just looking at gay porn and even masturbating to gay porn or using sexual objects with gay porn, then you're not straight.
Well, that's 100%
You don't have to call yourself gay, but you can't say you're straight. I mean, I don't think
that's the way
a straight man
not
behaves.
At all. No, not at all. You're 100% right. And that's why in the gay community, if you spoke to gay men that were proud of who they are, they would the vast majority would back up what you or I are saying right now in that, yes, that's BS. You cannot claim that you're bisexual or you're heterosexual with just, you know, turn-ons that are gay. That's nonsense. If somebody is masturbating and they're fantasizing all to gay porn, that is not the typical behavior of a heterosexual man at all. It's not just a phase.
How about
that
when these guys come up and they're asexual? They say they're asexual, they don't have any interest in sex, but they're still looking at gay porn.
Well, they're lying. I mean, it's a 100% lie. Asexual means just that. You're not interested in sex of any type, including, you know, when you're by yourself and no one knows what you're doing. You just have no interest in sex. There are some people like that. But if they're accessing gay porn, then obviously they are sexual. They're just not coming to terms with who they are. They're living a lie.
I have a question. There's some women online that were married to narcissists, and you know, they found gay porn and all this stuff. So, but they're saying that this narcissist has no sexual identity, and I don't believe that. I think there can be narcissists that are gay or straight, but are there some that have no sexual identity? They would go with man or woman?
Yeah, I mean, a narcissist is separate from sexuality. I mean, you could have someone who's sexually narcissistic. You know, that would be the person who only cares about their own pleasure and couldn't give one damn about their partner. That's narcissistic sexual behavior. And that's in the gay and straight community. I mean, you have, do not think that gay couples or lesbian couples don't have same, you know, the same issues, especially in gay couples. If you have one guy who is the, you know, the better looking of the two, don't think that in those relationships they don't have issues where the better looking man tries to flaunt, you know, his looks and let the other one know, like, you're lucky I'm with you. So the narcissist can be either straight or gay. That has no bearing on this.
Right.
At all. But if someone's claiming to be asexual, there's no way they have porn at all. They couldn't care less.
Asexual, but what about a narcissist that would go with either sex? Like sex with male or female.
That's more like a sexual addiction, maybe, Ira, as opposed to a sexual identity, maybe sexual addiction.
Well, I mean, first we also got to understand that the term sexual addiction is very controversial.
Okay.
I prefer the term compulsion as opposed to addiction. But we still shouldn't confuse, though, if someone has a sexual compulsion, they still know what their sexual identity is. So if somebody is constantly looking at gay porn, then we could, you know, argue. And there's so many questions that have to be asked. First off, you know, is this person in a relationship? You know, if someone's living off on their own and they don't have any sexual partners, then, you know, they're not interfering and hurting anybody else. So whatever they do, as long as they're not going to get arrested for it, you know, they're doing it. As long as, you know, if they're not accessing porn, whether it's heterosexual or gay porn at work or, you know, in an inappropriate place, whatever they do, it's their business.
Right.
Now, you know, in many heterosexual couples, you could have a husband that has a compulsion for porn, for heterosexual porn.
Right.
You know, he's looking at younger, usually,
in
you know.
In a straight marriage, I don't think he would have a compulsion for gay porn, right?
No. And if the man is straight, he's not interested. If a man is straight, he is not interested in the least in gay porn. It is that simple.
I mean, every straight man I know has said to me that, even though they're not anti-gay, they just said that the idea of watching gay porn makes them ill.
No, exactly.
I think that's a natural reaction for a straight man, right?
Yeah. There is not one thing that we've said here that is, you know, being anti-gay at all. We're saying that, you know, someone's orientation. So, yeah, somebody who is heterosexual is not going to be attracted to gay porn, and yeah, would find it repulsive. Just like someone who's gay and is comfortable being gay would find heterosexual porn repulsive. It's the same thing.
Although, to be honest with you, I have met a couple of men who prefer straight porn. And they said the reason for that is because when they look at it, they visualize themselves as the woman, and they get turned on by what the man is doing to them.
All right, I could see that. I mean, look, in heterosexual porn, you typically have two attractive-looking people there, so that would make sense if someone is gay.
And that's what I say to women. Don't let that fool you. Just because they're watching straight porn, if they're doing everything else in a gay way, then it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, no, I agree
with
you.
But, you know, so many times these guys are just justifying what they're doing. You know, they don't want to say that word gay. Because they confuse gay identity with gay community. And, you know, unfortunately, we're still in a society. It's much more accepting than when we were growing up. But there's still a stigma attached to it of being gay. So if you don't have to be gay, people prefer not to use that word. And this way, by saying married, saying bisexual, saying all these other words, you know, it's easier for them to get through it. But I tell women,
definitely.
It is what it is. You can't turn it into something straight when it's not straight, because straight men just don't behave that way.
No, exactly.
Maybe even talk a little bit of a narcissist also, Ira. You know, a lot of times what happens with our women, and I tell them, I warn them about this, you know, when they catch their husbands and they catch them involved in gay activities, and then all of a sudden the husband, you know, wipes it away by saying it was a mistake, it was a one-time thing, and he treats his wife better than he's ever treated her before, making her doubt that he'll ever do it again. And she, you know, it's like a cycle thing. I know it was with my ex-husband. You know, he would promise, oh, this will never happen again, and it was a one-time thing. And then, you know, you give him a little leverage, a little inch to move, and the next thing is happening again and again and again. This is not something that just comes and goes at whim, correct?
No, it's always going to be there. It will always be there. And that's where the woman, the wife, would have to make a decision on how much she's able to accept versus, you know, what she finds unacceptable. Because like you said earlier, sometimes breaking up is not the easiest thing, depending on, you know, kids and finances. So she has to, everyone has to figure for out for themselves how to make what relationship either they're in or how to get out of it. Yeah, it's not just a phase that someone's going through.
Deb, did you have any comment on that?
Oh, no. I'm sorry. You'll have to excuse me a second. I had two bees in my apartment, and I just had to
no problem,
take
Deb.
Care of them.
Please?
Just give me a second.
Don't worry about us. Worry about getting stung.
See, everyone has to realize that, that shame is one of the strongest emotions a person can experience.
Uh-huh.
And if a person feels shame, they're going to, one way of dealing with shame is to just lie.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody gets, you know, caught, whether, you know, it could have been a heterosexual, you know, cheating affair that they had, and they swear, you know, whenever somebody swears up and down, this is the first and only time it ever happened, I got to tell you, that to me sounds really unbelievable right there. Because, like I said, when someone is ashamed, they're going to lie and do and say whatever they can to try to weasel their way out of the lie. So one of the easiest things to say is this is the first time, and they'll swear to God up and down. That's why I'm saying earlier, a good liar, you cannot tell that they're lying to you. So it's very difficult when someone that you're supposed to trust, you know, is swearing to God, this is the first time this ever happened, it'll never happen again. You want to believe them, and they're looking you in the face telling you, you know, this story, so you believe them. But it's bullshit in plain English.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you got
because
busted
you wanna
the first
believe them,
time.
Right?
Yeah, it's like, you know, the first time you went speeding, you know, you got busted. Of course not. You know, we probably speed hundreds of times before, you know, we get pulled over by a cop. So when someone says this was the first time this ever happened, I swear, there's 9 out of 10 times, 99 out of 100 times, I would say that that's a lie. And they just don't want to tell the truth because they are ashamed. They don't want to be outed. They don't want their family to know. They don't want your kids to know. You know, they're ashamed of the behavior, so they're going to lie to you.
Last night I was speaking to a woman. You know, my heart went out to her. You know, she's been through a lot in her marriage. And she had a, see, the hardest ones are the marriages that are good. When you have a bad marriage, you know, it explains everything. But when you're totally blindsided, but she was saying to me that a number of years ago, her husband was diagnosed with hepatitis. And he explained to her that it was one-time chance encounter and this happened. And I said, that's very unlikely. It really is, because a lot of times they'll tell you they've only done something outside one time and they realize how wrong it was. I said, if he's still looking at the gay porn now, he's still looking at gay websites, you can be sure that he's still acting on it. You know, people don't stop acting on this. Especially, they're still looking at it, right?
Of course, of course. And today with technology, you know, what makes, you know, if someone does have a compulsion, especially with porn, you know, it's no longer, you have these large, you know, bulky computers. You have tablets, you know, you have your own cell phone that you could use.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no idea
and
if anybody's done any studies with, you know, especially the larger screen cell phones, you know, how much of that is used for porn. So a person could have access to porn with technology incredibly easy.
It's just right at your fingertips.
Yeah, it literally is, like 24/7. You know, you could be in bed next to your partner and they could be looking at porn when you think they're doing something with work off their cell phone. I'm not Mr. Technology here, but yeah, they probably could, you know, find some way to block it so you couldn't even see their history. So my point is that when you say, you know, like the trust, you have to give the person trust. There's no way you could monitor somebody 24/7 even, and why should you even have to live a life like that, assuming you could?
Yes, I agree. If you have to live a life like that, it's not worth
yeah,
being.
Yeah, exactly. It's like if you have to start going through, you know, your spouse's, you know, call list and who's texting them, chances are something is already wrong.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's already corrupted when you're at that level. Either you're insecure or your gut feeling is 100% right. So why would be in a relationship where... where the person is either constantly accusing you because they're insecure, or you know that there's something that doesn't add up here. You know, one and one doesn't add two. And the big thing is, you know, if someone is, whether it's heterosexual or homosexual, if a guy is not going to bed, let's say, the same time with his wife, and he's not having ever initiating sex or rarely does, unless he's having some medical issue. See, that's one of the first things. If somebody says that they present an issue of having low libido, low sex drive, okay, so now we have to figure out, is this a psychological issue or is it a physical issue? So many times side effects of antidepressants, lower sex drive, as a man ages, his levels of testosterone go down. And if issues at work and finances are present as the male body gets older, sex drive goes down. And this is very damaging for the psyches of many heterosexual men. So there could be a legitimate reason why a man is not interested or is unable to have sex with his wife. But if he's watching porn all the time, straight or gay, well, his sex drive is going to go down. So then when he goes to bed, the last thing on his mind is going to want to be to have sex. So if a woman is in a relationship with a man and he's not initiating sex with her at all, we have to figure out, well, why is this? And then that also assumes that, you know, he's going to eventually be honest and say why, you know, he's not, because that's very embarrassing, you know, for a guy. So is it something medical?
Well, as time goes on, but most of these marriages don't even have sex for most of the time from the beginning. I mean, you know, they get to have some sexual activity, but it diminishes very quickly, which is one of the signs that I always tell women, you know, because healthy heterosexual younger males want sex.
Yeah, totally.
So if your husband's boyfriend doesn't want sex, I mean, I've met women who are in their 30s and who said, we haven't had sex in 7 or 10 years. There's something wrong there. I'm sorry.
They accepted that, I'll never know. I mean,
right.
how could they stay in a relationship for that where months go by and they don't have sex?
Right. Well, this is years go by and they don't have it. And, you know, they just accept it. And they just assume this is how people are. And, you know, I agree with you. There's all kinds of financial problems and children difficulties. But basically, when you have a loving relationship, you know, making love to each other is something people look forward to. Maybe it's not as frequently as it used to be. But, you know, you try to make time for doing something that's pleasurable, and if they don't want to do it, and especially you're in your 30s, you know, I hate when women come to me in their 30s and they say they haven't had sex in 5 or 8 years. That really upsets me.
And they're in a marriage?
You know, they keep thinking they're doing, huh?
They're in a relationship?
Yeah. Yes, and they're married.
Yeah, no, something was wrong a long, long time ago.
But, you know, I think it's part of the problem, Ira, that women don't understand gay. And I wrote about that last month. You know, we shouldn't beat ourselves up. But the truth of the matter is, why would a woman think that a gay man wants to marry her? You know, people always say, well, how did you miss it? Well, why would I even think it? You know,
yeah.
I think homosexual means you want to be with somebody who's your sex, not the opposite sex. So, and these guys live a lie every day, you know, it becomes part inherent in their nature and their personality, and they don't want to be gay. And so, you know, they're trying their best to use you as their cover to try not to be gay. But, you know, they'll come up with really good excuses. Deborah, did your husband come up with good excuses?
For not having sex?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Depression and medication and... Yeah, it went on for 10 to 12 years of no intimate relationship at all until the marriage ended.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. You were a trusting person, so how are you, you know, you're supposed to know? You know, how
right,
and that's legit.
Because I know even when I met my ex-husband, you know, and I didn't suspect it, but a couple of people, you know, gave me some suggestion that he might be, quote, bisexual back in those days. And when I confronted him with it, you know, right before we got married, I'll never forget that he took the table, lifted it up in the middle of the restaurant, nearly knocked it over, screaming, who would ever say that about me? And I felt so happy, you know, I felt so relieved. And I said, well, you know, I grew up as a child of the 60s and early 70s. I said, if you had experiences, I'd understand, because that's the way we were socialized back then, that everybody tries everything. So he said, I would never do something like that. And, you know, when you want to believe and they're trying to make a life with you, why would you think that he's gay? I mean, it'd be the last thing in my psyche to think that.
Right,
You know, I think. Women blame themselves a lot. And that's why we tell them you have to really know the signs and the signals. And, you know, that's the problem. We just don't see it. We don't see it coming. And when you're with a narcissist, they know how to lie. They know how to pretend. And they know how to confuse you. Wouldn't you say so,
Yeah,
Deb?
No, totally. You have to let yourself off the hook.
My ex-husband was very narcissistic, and I realize it's a separate than sexual identity, but I'm not really putting them together and saying because he's closeted gay that he's a narcissist, but his behavior followed the pattern of narcissistic abuse.
Well, in what way? Accusing you of being the problem in the marriage?
He was abusive early on physically, and then after, you know, I had him arrested, he changed his tactics, you know, very manipulative, tearing me down, you know, twisting everything to make it my fault, pushing me away, pulling me back for years.
Myra, do these guys ever change? I mean, when they have these personality disorders, do they ever say, you know, my whole life is so screwed up, look what I'm doing, I need to change? Do you ever see that happening with people?
No. I'd say that to say, but no. It's incredibly rare to know. The hope is there that it's going to happen, but the person, unfortunately, looks at everything from the view of what's in it for me. So the only, what looks like change is something that they've judged at this time in their life is a tactic that's going to work for them. But it's a tactic. It's not genuine.
Mm-hmm.
So now, if somebody has that type of deceitfulness, anything they do is just a tactic to keep the other person in that trap for as long as they can.
And that's what I see now, and that's what I'm aware of now, is these were all tactics. And, how do I describe it? If I was around him, I've been divorced now for 6 years, but if I was around him for any length of time in my present life, I don't see him as a person that would not abuse me. He would always look at me as a target for abuse. We live in different states, so.
Well, hopefully, and you know, this program will educate women to recognize that they have to respect themselves and not allow somebody to cause them to doubt. I mean, in any healthy relationship, your respect and self-esteem increases.
I'd like to ask your opinion on something, Ira.
Yep.
There's a therapist out there named Joe Court. He has a website, Straight Guys. And one of his claims is about sexual abuse. Now, I just want to tell you that I'm philosophically 100% opposed to this man in general. But, you know, because he justifies that you could be straight and be having gay sex, which I don't agree with. But he says approximately 1 in 6 boys is sexually abused before the age of 16. Often males who have been sexually traumatized and are abused act out homosexual behavior, also known as homosexual behavioral imprinting. Some of these men are gay or bisexual, but most are not. Males who have been sexually abused are often confused about their sexual orientation because of the trauma. These men, gay, bisexual, and straight, reenact the trauma through homosexual behavior as adults. The fundamental principle here is that males are reenacting their sexual abuse, not expressing a homosexual identity. In other words, the behavior is homosexual in that it is a male on male. However, the sexually abused male is heterosexual. These men are returning to the scene of the sexual crime and trying to diffuse and desensitize their emotional pain unconsciously. In other words, they're acting out early childhood sexual abuse. Are you familiar with this train of thought?
The closest that I'm familiar with it, I don't know this guy specifically, but there's someone, Nicolosi. And Nicolosi is a California, I believe, therapist who is a legitimate therapist that came out with what he calls reparative therapy, which he was saying, you know, is where in the case of men, where they fail to either bond with a father or feel they were accepted by their father. So they're confusing physical sex with men as, you know, without realizing that it is an emotional replacement for what they missed. Now, is that true for some people? I guess to say a very small percent, it sounds like it could be. You know, nothing in the in this world we can say is like 100%, you know, applies to every single situation. So I know reparative therapy, New Jersey was even considering, I don't know where they went with this, of making it illegal to use as as a form of treatment. So I don't think this guy's, you got to remember, people write stuff in order to sell things, you know, to make money. How much they believe in it,
right,
I really don't know.
He counsels for $300 an hour on the telephone to convince men they're not gay.
Yeah, so to me it sounds like he's taking something that might apply to 1 out of 100 men and is using it, you know, to make money, to milk as many men as he can for thousands of dollars.
Because men like hearing that. It's not because they're gay. It's because they were abused as a child.
Yeah, right? And I don't know where these statistics are coming out that 1 out of 6, you know, guys was abused. And how do they define abuse? It's, you know, whenever we hear things about, like, the term sexual assault, what is the operational definition of that word? And that is something that these surveys or statistics that you'll look at online, unless they say it, they're garbage then, because there's a wide range of behavior that could be all lumped together to say that this is harassment. And there's definite levels of degree that separate, you know, just someone who is who is rude versus, you know, a sexually harassing comment. There's a difference between them, and that's usually not said in these surveys here. So the fact that he's saying, you know, 1 out of 6 boys was abused, I don't know where in the world that's coming from.
No,
and
even
also
if
remember
so,
that that's
to me,
excuse,
it's the same thing. It's like
many people use that as an excuse to justify their behavior. The fact is, most people
yes,
that were sexually abused as kids do not grow up into being abusers themselves.
And I mean, the same thing is that, you know, if you were, let's say, physically abused when you were a child, does that mean when you get older you're going to look for somebody who's into sadomasochism because you want to relive that part of your abuse?
No.
To me, that makes the same amount of sense.
No, but
right?
Some women that have been sexually abused as children grow up and don't treat their bodies too well, like, you know, some of them become prostitutes or...
Yeah,
right.
Somebody,
that's
you know, it's like... You know, I know it's a book and it was a movie, The Perks of Being a Wallflower, but the line about, you know, we accept the love, we seek the love, you know, we think we should accept is really, you know, or it was something like that, is really true in any kind of relationship. So, you know, somebody, male or female, that doesn't have self-respect for themselves will enter into abusive relationship. They won't know how to operate in a healthy relationship because they don't feel that respect for themselves, so they can't then have a relationship with someone who's going to respect them. So,
and that's
so kind of, I believe.
It took me a lifetime to learn that lesson, that that is true.
Well, not a lifetime, because you still got a lot of years left. So... It sounds like it took a long time, but, it, you know, at least you learned it.
Yes, I did.
Like here, for instance, one of the one of his chapters of one of his books, Joe Court, says, "Your husband probably isn't gay. Jennifer can't believe it. Just married and pregnant, she discovers that her husband has been meeting Brad for sex. When confronted, Tom doesn't deny it, but he insists it's just a thing and he isn't gay. Jennifer is sure her marriage can't survive, but things are not as bad as she fears. After seeing me for therapy, Tom and Jennifer come to understand that even though some of Tom's sexual behavior is gay, his sexual orientation is straight. His compulsion to have sex with men is rooted in the abuse he suffered as a boy from a school coach. Therapy gives him relief. Tom and Jennifer are able to repair their relationship, reestablish, and save the marriage. John's wife, Karen, is just as upset as Jennifer when she discovers that her husband likes to watch gay porn. In my office, Karen raises the same question that Jennifer has. Does this mean my husband is gay? Can my marriage survive? After a period of therapy, I determined that John is, in fact, not gay. Although therapy can diminish a man's dependence on fantasies and porn, sometimes the simplest and most effective solution is not to worry about it. After Karen understands that John's interest in gay porn isn't a threat to her marriage, she becomes less concerned and the crisis is partly resolved by acceptance. Tom wants sex with men, although he isn't gay. John watches gay porn, and he's also not gay. These stories illustrate the fact that men can be straight but have gay sexual interests." See, I don't get that.
Well, I do. It's called money. It's that simple. It's that easy. That reading that stuff is very appealing to somebody, male or female, you know, for a woman who's looking to salvage the marriage or for a guy to talk himself into not thinking he's gay. I guarantee you in the gay community, that work is probably looked on with great contempt.
For people who are authentically gay, right?
Yeah. They would look at that as that's an insult to them. It's also suggesting that anybody who's gay is gay because they were molested. I mean, and that's a hot issue in the gay community because you have, you know, stupid heterosexual people that may think, oh, they're going to, like, abuse my kid. There's no connection there. And the heterosexuals, you know, I mean, homosexuals would be very sensitive to the argument that they're gay just because of an abusive situation, because it's still keeping a negative stigma to their orientation. And that's what this program, we're not trying to do. This isn't anti-gay. It's just like anti-dishonesty. You know, don't hide who you are and then drag somebody else into your hell because you just don't have the backbone to admit who you are as a person.
Well, I'll tell you something. A lot of people buy into this theory. I'm just not one of them. And I think it's all about what you can live with and what you can't. You know, people can justify whatever they want, and they can live with whatever they feel they have to live with. But, you know, I just couldn't do it. You know, I tried. It didn't work for me. And I don't know any women who are doing it who are happy knowing that every time their husbands are going out, they're going to be having sex with men and not with them. You know, so you know, once again, I told somebody last night, I can't tell you what to do. You have to make that decision. But, you know, every time you look at your husband knowing that he's been out there cheating with men, how do you feel every time he walks out of the house? You know, do you have to always wonder? And she said, that's the one thing I hate the most, is that I have to always feel like a private detective. And that's not a way to lead a healthy marriage, right?
No, not at all. Not at all. But, you know, if she... You know, she may have made her choice. She may be embarrassed to say, you know, why she would get a divorce if she would. There might be, you know, financial issues there. Maybe her parents didn't want her to marry the guy. And she's, you know, nervous about if we break up, now they're going to be like, I told you so. You know, there's not any...
Yeah, she's looking to leave, you know, which is good. You know, she just she was fooled for so many years. And she said to me, I don't know how I could have been fooled for so long. But I said to her, it's easy to get fooled, you know, when it's not looking you straight in the face and you have to look at all these little clues and hints and put them all together and really not understanding homosexuality, that it's just not something that's, you know, thrilled for the moment. It's what you are as a human being. And,
yeah, and
once again, if women want to live like that, I don't tell them no. I just send them to groups that support that. I just don't.
Everyone needs to always remember that the longer a person is in an unhealthy environment, they normalize the unhealthy behaviors that are going on. That's why when parents talk about staying together for the sake of the kids, I know last time I think we spoke, I used this expression when they say we don't want, you know, to have a broken family. My response to them is, what are you talking about? It already is broken. It's been broken. If you drop a bowl and it breaks into dozens of pieces and you put them all in a box together, is the bowl still usable? No, it's broken. So the longer people stay in these unhealthy relationships, it does become easier. They become numb to the behavior. So I could see why some people, if the money is coming in and it's just easier to continue with this type of relationship, some people could accept it. And you're
what
right.
What about the example of for the children?
About the children?
Because children... Yeah, I mean, if a lot of women say to me, well, I have to stay here until the children grow up because it's going to be unhealthy if they have to come from a, you know, divorced family.
Exactly what
I
said a minute ago. The longer your kids are in a relationship where they're being, where the modeling is of a cold, loveless relationship, that's what you're dooming them to. Because they then look at it like this is what a normal relationship is like. And if And so to have your kids in that, no, not at all. You're normalizing for them unhealthy behavior. So don't be surprised in 20, 25 years when they go through this kind of nonsense.
Exactly.
You meant well, and I don't blame these people because, you know, many of us, depending on how old we are, grew up where you didn't want to have your kids in a divorced household and, you know, we thought we were doing the best that we could for our kids without realizing we weren't.
The damage,
you know, we actually
were
doing more damage. Yeah, I don't know,
if I
brought this up before, but like if I was, let's say, called by parents to talk with one of their kids about an issue, my first thing to the parents would be, I want to see the two of you here. And their reaction to me, this is like a family, you know, this is a big, you know, philosophical foundation for family counseling, family systems theory, where the parent may say, well, what does our marriage have to do with anything? Well, if your kid is in an unhealthy environment, no matter how much good I do with your kid, it's going to go nowhere if they step back into a bad environment. And I use the analogy constantly where it's like if you're next to a pile of crap, no matter how many times you change your clothes and how many showers you take, if that pile of crap is next to you all the time, you're still going to end up smelling. And if someone is in an unhealthy relationship or atmosphere, the longer they're in it, the more unhealthy they're going to be. So going back to the parents saying how they want to stay together for the sake of their kids, It's thinking that is well meaning, but unfortunately, it's having a disastrous effect on your kids.
I think a lot of times what happens is that you become so beaten down in these marriages. I mean, certainly I was, and I was only there for a few years, but you know, I can't even imagine being in a marriage like that for 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 years like these women are, and you just learn how to give into it. You can't keep fighting it, so you just become complacent in it. You're in survival mode, and you're not looking to upset the apple cart because you're too afraid of it. You know, it's a fear thing because you've been so conditioned to accept, you know, non-acceptable behavior, and over the years, it really takes its toll on your identity and who you are. So
Without question.
Do understand that. Right. I just encourage women, you know, the longer you stay, every day that you lose yourself in a marriage like this, you can never get it back. And life is very short. You know, you think it's long while you're living in hell. But the reality is that you only get one chance at life, and you need to be happy. I mean, you need to have happiness in your life, peace of mind, not walk on eggshells, not be walking along those cracked eggshells. You know, that's how I used to feel all the time, and I just was too selfish to do it. I said, I'm not going to stay in this kind of relationship. I need to have respect for myself enough And no matter how hard it was for me, and back then you certainly know that it was, you know, it was better than living with someone who was abusive. No matter how much I had to struggle, it was easier than struggling in a destructive marriage. So I think I was lucky because it ended, you know, much earlier than other women who were there for so many years and just learned to accept this kind of behavior. But once again, that's all part of this whole thing. And Ira, I can't thank you enough, you know, for being a guest with us. I'm hoping, you know, I know that your words mean a lot because we get such wonderful feedback when you're on here. And even though we talk about the same topics, women need to hear it over and over because there's always new women who are listening in and, you know, who need this kind of advice. And you're really upfront and you tell it like it is. And I'm really hoping you'll come back again.
Yeah, I encourage, you know, people listening, you know, send Bonnie emails asking for questions. One thing, you know, I try to pride myself on is being a straight shooter. And, you know, I try to use my expertise and background, you know, to help shed some light on, you know, a difficult topic.
That's a good word, Ira, straight shooter. So, yeah, that's wonderful. And if you have any questions for Ira, you can send them to me at bonk@aol.com. I want to thank my friend and co-host who's here tonight, Deborah Sutton. You can read Deborah Sutton's books if you go to amazon.com. And Deborah, tell them the names of your two books.
Signs of a Gay Husband, Identifying Closeted Gay Husband Behavior, and Signs of a Gay Husband, Volume 2, On the Other Side of Fear.
Yes, and they're both excellent books that if you're just starting out on your journey, you will really find amazing and make a connection with Deborah, who also has her blog, right, Deborah?
Yes. It's Signs of a
Gay
Husband.
You know, and how can they access them? Okay, and how do they get to that?
Signs of a Gay Husband by Deborah Sutton. They can Google it and find that online.
Okay, and if you have any trouble at all accessing Deborah's materials, just write to me, and I will certainly send you a link to everything. So to both of you, thank you so much for joining me tonight.
My pleasure,
I always feel I'm in the best of company with you too. And have a wonderful week to all of our listeners. Hope is always on the way. Never feel defeated, never give up, and realize that there's a whole new life that's wonderful out there for you. You just have to allow it for yourself. Write to me at bonk@aol.com, and I'll show you the road on how to do it. To everybody, have a wonderful week. To my guest tonight, thank you so much. Love you both, and I'll talk to you both soon again. Good night.
Bye.
Good night.
Bye.